Ladies and gentlemen, children of all ages, it's time to ask the question, who's the Bosk?
This is the podcast you're looking for. Who is this Bosk character? I fear him. Who is the Bosk?
Welcome to Who's the Bosk After Dark. I'm David Murto, your host this week.
Ghost host.
And every 10 episodes on this program, we take one step away from Star Wars and do something called the Mike and David Movie Club.
Yes.
With my guest here, Mike Celestino of Laughing Place.
It's been a while, David.
It has been a while.
I apologize.
On it's behalf not your fault. It's Lucasfilm
for not
film.
Putting out
yeah,
enough content not, for me to talk
they
about.
They got
to
put stuff out for this show to get more episodes.
Remember
out.
You watched that presentation where they announced all those TV shows?
And I said that was too much.
Yeah, it wasn't enough.
It wasn't enough.
We need more content to talk about. I think the last time we did one of these was in June of last year.
Of last year. It's been over 6 months? Wow.
Right.
Yeah, and that was Michael Clayton.
Great Clayton.
And in that episode, you had more thoughts and wrote out a response and made me look a real fool. Just dropped your voice in the middle of the episode, arguing against
it. It'll happen again in this episode.
Okay, but you're nuts if you think I'm not going to do the same thing to you.
Okay.
So I'm going to send you an audio recording. You have to put it in when I say.
After this recording.
After tonight's recording,
okay,
yeah.
Sure. I will put it in. It'll be inserted right here.
No. You got to save it for when I can't think of something to say.
Oh,
and then
I see.
I'll be like, put in the thing now.
Okay.
And it'll be really good.
Gotcha.
And everyone will think I'm the smart one.
Right. I just feel like as the host and the person, quote unquote, editing these episodes, as much as I edit them, I get to have the last laugh. But yeah, it's fair.
Okay.
Turnabout is fair play.
That's right.
We'll accept it. David, we're pretty much caught up on all the 5 Star Wars questions.
I graduated. And I am the Bosk at this
you're
point.
One of the...
Who, I'm the answer to the show's titular question, who's the Bosk?
So seeing as how it's been, I don't know, however many months since we've recorded an episode, is there anything you want to talk about? Just anything you want to bring up?
Anything on
Earth?
Yeah,
anything.
Okay, let's talk about Luc Besson.
Okay. Leon the Professional.
Right. This guy
Fifth
had...
Element.
Right. This dude... had a new Dracula movie. I'm fascinated by this.
Okay.
There were 2 Dracula movies last year. There was the Russian AI one.
This is not even counting Nosferatu.
No. Was right. that last year?
That was...
Might have been...
No, I guess we're in
24.
January now, so that was a year prior, yeah.
But Luc Besson, I was reading about his version of Dracula. Can I read you a couple of things you said about...
Yes, I like that you had this ready to go.
I was hoping we got to talk about Luc Besson.
Okay.
He said of his Dracula, it's a totally romantic approach. There's a romantic side in Bram Stoker's book that hasn't been explored that much. It's a love story about a man who waits for 400 years for the reincarnation of his wife. That's the true heart of the story, waiting an eternity for the return of love. And he also said in a different interview, when you take the original novel, it's a real love story. Blah, 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 blah. So I wanted to go back to this man who loses his wife and who sadly is eternal because God stops him from dying and he looks for his wife for 400 years. None of that is in the novel, Dracula. This is something that he's getting from the Francis Ford Coppola movie.
Right, uh-huh.
And he's acting like he's taking it back to the source material.
Which is just extrapolated from other films.
Right, yeah. But, and I guess the Francis Ford Coppola movie took that from an older movie where Jack Palance was Dracula.
Oh, okay.
That Richard Matheson. So he was the one who came up with the idea of the reincarnation of the lost love. But it was just very amusing to me. That's fine. It's just amusing to me that Luc Besson apparently thought he was being more true to the original when in fact he was not. And he's just one of those guys, you talk about trying to separate art from the artist.
Yeah.
It's there's wonderful movies made by terrible, terrible people, mostly men. And Luc Besson is, that's an easy one. Like, you get to hate his movies and you don't, and you're like, oh, I have no qualms about hating these movies. Like, I wasn't going to enjoy them anyway.
Sure. Who plays Dracula in Luc Besson's
Oh,
Dracula?
Gosh. A young guy, Caleb Landry.
Okay, I don't know him.
Okay.
We should, there's a few news items. We don't usually do Star Wars headlines in your episode.
We often bank them ahead of time.
Right. This is coming out in between Star Wars projects. So we're going to do a few. You know, the day after I recorded the previous episode, there was a huge Star Wars news item, a Star Wars headline, as it were. Kathleen Kennedy has officially stepped down as the president of Lucasfilm. This was rumored for a long time. A lot of leaks coming through the trade, industry trades.
And then they try to deny it.
Yeah.
And it's why bother?
They're not really denying. They're just like, we want to announce it on our own time, basically. And then it's the same thing that people already knew. They just said it later, I guess. So in her successors will be Dave Filoni,
Guy who directed the Clone Wars movies?
Yes. Dave Filoni, who, you know, to be fair, he was hired by George Lucas to help run the Clone Wars TV show and, yes, directed that theatrical movie. And now he's, you know, he's been involved with some of the live action
Tons
stuff
of
as
them.
Well.
Yeah.
And then his co-president will be Lynwen Brennan, who was the president of the business side of Lucasfilm. So it's basically, I don't know, it seems like pretty much having the same position.
Any relation to Who's the Boss?
Christian
Brennan?
I don't believe, I'll have to ask him, but I don't believe so. I feel like Brennan's probably a fairly common name. But I don't know, do you have any thoughts on this? This is something that people kind of knew was coming for a while.
Yeah, I mean, that was like Kathleen Kennedy got a lot of heat for not having like a grand vision for the sequel trilogy, and obviously like Filoni 100% is a grand vision guy. He likes to tie all his stuff together, so yeah, that's a course correction, I guess.
Here's what really bothers me in as far as the fandom goes.
Okay, sure.
For the last decade, people have been a certain segment of the fandom has been like, oh, we got to get rid of Kathleen Kennedy. Anybody would be better than Kathleen Kennedy. A good portion of those people were like, Dave Filoni would be a better president of Lucasfilm than Kathleen Kennedy. And now that it's happened, all I see are people complaining that Dave Filoni is the president of Lucasfilm.
What's their issue with it?
Well, people soured on like The Mandalorian and the other live-action Disney Plus Star Wars content. And, yeah, I mean, there's just... honestly, a big part of it is Andor, because...
Oh, people are like, it all needs to be like Andor now.
Yeah, exactly. And there's a rumor going around now, started by my friend Drew Taylor at The Wrap. I really want to talk to him about this, because I haven't seen him since this article came out, but he wrote a piece on The Wrap about how, I mean, it was a profile of Dave Filoni in general, but it mentioned that he didn't care for Andor. But then people have brought out all these clips, public interviews, where Dave Filoni has done nothing but gush about Andor. So at least publicly, he's saying that he really enjoyed the show. Now, is he getting insider information? This is a trusted entertainment news source. I don't know what the truth is behind that. But yeah, it feels to me like people just really love to complain.
Oh yeah. The Star Wars fandom, definitely.
Yes, but it's true. I do think it's true of every fandom. Like Star Wars is just the one that I happen to be closest to. But we went
and
to
it has a lot of online presence.
So yeah, that's true. But we went to a Star Trek thing today. A Star Trek trivia thing.
Oh, yeah.
And I was kind of reminded, like, this is just, it's just true of everything. Like, people just, like, love to complain about, you know, it was better when I was growing up. And sometimes it may very well be the case. But I like to keep a, you know, open mind and cautious optimism.
That's a good
going
attitude.
Forward, as always. So, yeah, that's the big news coming out of the leadership side of Lucasfilm.
A new emperor.
Yes, there's a co-emperor's in charge of the company now, and we'll see how that impacts the actual output. But speaking of the actual output, and speaking of Dave Filoni as well, we have this new animated series starting April 6th on Disney Plus called Star Wars Maul Shadow Lord. It's about Maul, who used to go by Darth Maul.
Yeah, drop the Darth, it's cleaner.
Drop the Darth, yeah. He was cut in half at the end of The Phantom Menace, but he got better.
Right.
You may know.
He's got big spider legs,
yeah, I think. Exactly. Yeah, in the Clone cool Wars, he's got spider legs. He popped up in
Solo,
a Star Wars story, and he popped up in Star Wars Rebels. So this series is going to be between all that stuff. It's after the end of the Clone Wars and before the beginning of, but before Solo and before Rebels. So it's like right after the Empire has come to power. And we're seeing what Maul was up to during that time. We know he's in charge of this Crimson Dawn crime syndicate. So I imagine a lot of it will be about that. It's 10 episodes long this season. I don't know if they've said there will be multiple seasons, but at least this season will be 10 episodes. And it'll start April 6th. The finale will be on May the 4th. So they're actually releasing two episodes a week. I'm looking forward to it. I think the stuff they've done with Maul in the animation has been really interesting. You know, there wasn't much to his character in The Phantom Menace, but they've expanded on him. They've made him a compelling character. I know you haven't checked out a lot of the animation, so it's not something that you would be interested in.
But is it the same guy doing the voice?
It's Sam Witwer,
voiced he's Maul. Been doing it in all the animation and in Solo, right?
He voiced him in Solo. And
it was
and
originally Peter Serafinowicz, right, who did him in the movie?
That's right, yes. It was Ray Park was the physical embodiment of Maul, and then Peter Serafinowicz was the voice. That's right. I'd forgotten about that.
Yeah, very, very funny comedian.
Yeah.
Who also has a cool voice.
Yep. But that's Maul Shadow Lord coming April 6th. And then the one other thing I wanted to mention that came out after the recording of the last episode. Previous episode, by the way, we talked all about Star Wars Galaxy's Edge and the changes coming there. And I mentioned, I think, that there's going to be a comic book kind of explaining the in-universe events that lead to those changes at Black Spire Outpost on Batuu. We got more information about that. The comic is called Star Wars Galaxy's Edge, Echoes of the Empire. And it'll be written by Ethan Sachs, who has been on this podcast. He wrote the original Galaxy's Edge miniseries. He wrote the Star Wars Galactic Star Cruiser comic miniseries. He's done the Star Wars Bounty Hunters comic and a bunch of other stuff for Marvel and Lucasfilm Publishing. This miniseries will start April 22nd and run for 5 issues. So it'll be around that time.
So he has to explain why they're characters from like all different time periods.
This is just an explanation of why Darth Vader and Luke Skywalker are there, basically.
Okay.
It's not going to address the fractured timeline of it all. But
that would have been a good challenge.
Yeah, exactly. But you can look forward to that if you're a Disney Parks fan, if you're a Galaxy's Edge fan, you could pick up that miniseries starting April 22nd. Okay. Those are the things I wanted to get across in
headlines.
Star Wars headlines this week. Should we head right into our main topic?
Yeah. So like I mentioned, every 10 episodes I drop by and we take a look at a movie that's not a Star Wars movie, but it's one degree away from a Star Wars. We have to find a connection.
Yeah, exactly.
Right? And this time I chose a movie called The Big Chill from 1983. And this is from the gentleman, Lawrence Kasdan, who wrote The Empire Strikes Back.
And Return of the Jedi, which also came out in 1983.
Yeah.
Busy during that period.
Yeah. So he, you know, got some big gigs in the early 80s. He wrote Empire Strikes Back, taking over from Lee Brackett, who had passed away. And then rolled right into Raiders of the Lost Ark, or maybe wrote them in the other order. I can't recall. But so biggest name in screenwriting in terms of box office. Yeah. And then
right here, I want to throw out, there's a direct reference to Indiana Jones.
Yeah, and Raiders of the Lost Ark. Yeah, they do the
they hum the Raiders theme when they're fighting the bat.
Yeah, like a mock heroic moment in the movie. Yeah. And I was at the playground with my son a week or two ago, and some like little kids were playing on the playground, and one of them started doing the Indiana Jones song, and I was like, "It's still there, yeah, it's still out there." So that was fun as hell. But yeah, so Lawrence Kasdan, on top of the world, could get any Plum screenwriting gig, but he's basically like, I want to be a director and I want to make my own movies, and he had the cachet to do that. And so the first one he did was, I think, Body Heat, which you've covered on this podcast because that was the Lucasfilm.
I think George Lucas helped it get off the ground, and I don't think he has his name in the credits, but it was in that book that I used as my guide for that whole year. We were doing the Lucasfilm retrospective. They talked about how he helped Lawrence Kasdan kind of get funding for Body Heat. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So Body Heat, really cool, like neo-noir movie starring William Hurt. But Kasdan has said like a lot of that was just like a couple actors in a sweaty room, you know? And he's like, I got to make a movie with more characters. So his next movie was The Big Chill, this film that kind of went in a different direction, but still has William Hurt.
Yeah.
Playing a completely different character.
Right.
You know? He's betting women left and right in Body Heat, and then in this he's impotent.
It's implied that his genitals were injured in the war? Is that what you took from it?
He was injured in some way that affected him in that way.
Yeah.
I don't know. We don't know the specifics.
He doesn't get into it. He says, did I ever tell you what happened to me in Vietnam, basically?
Right,
they
cut away
to the bat.
And then there was another Star Wars connection that I learned about afterwards that is Jonathan Kasdan, the co-writer of, along with his father, Solo, A Star Wars Story, actually has the first dialogue in the movie.
Oh, he's, I didn't realize
he, he's the little boy in the bathtub.
I have interviewed both Jonathan and Lawrence Kasdan together in the same room when Solo, A Star Wars Story came out. So that's really cool. I did not realize that was him. I probably read that before, but I didn't put it together. We should also mention, Lawrence Kasdan came back to co-write The Force Awakens with J.J. Abrams. And then he and his son, Jonathan Kasdan, wrote Solo, A Star Wars Story. So there's even more connections to Star Wars there. What else you got?
What do we want to talk about? Like, get into what the movie's all about?
What about our relationships with this movie?
I've seen it a handful of times. I like it pretty well. But, you know, mostly I love the soundtrack. The soundtrack is it's like mostly like Motown hits from the 60s. Yeah. The characters went to school at University of Michigan, like in the late 60s. Uh-huh. So it's like a lot of because, you know, Ann Arbor is like very close to Detroit. So it's like all like Motown hits from that era that they would have liked when they were in school.
Right.
And we've got the Big Chill soundtrack and I think it's called like More Hits from the Big Chill on vinyl. And we listen to it all the time.
Yeah, that was my big exposure. I think I mentioned this in the last time we talked, like when you chose The Big Chill, that my mom was really into this movie.
Yeah.
And we had the soundtrack, I think probably on vinyl record when I was growing up. So I heard it a lot. I remember like I heard it through the grapevine. Like,
yeah, that's the first track.
Yeah. And then I always thought of this movie as like the adult movie, you know, like,
well, it's 100% boomer movie. It's I was thinking while we were watching, is this the most boomer movie ever made?
Yeah, I was thinking like, okay, these characters were teenagers in the 60s, right? So they would have been born around what, like the late 40s?
If they were in college in the late 40s. This total.
So is that considered, is the entirety of the 40s considered like,
I think, boomers? Post-war.
Anything, post-World War II. So, that makes sense. The most boomer movie ever. Yeah, I think that's accurate.
Yeah. And we'll get into it a little. It's not just the age, it's the attitudes in the movie are very, very boomerish.
Right.
But, so, was this your first time seeing it?
This is my first time watching it, I think for the reasons I listed above, I always kind of avoided it. I told you last time, like, if it was something that my mom was really into, I always kind of, like, steered away from it. Like, to the point where she...
Michelangelo, why you no listen to your mom?
That's not the Italian side of my family.
Oh.
My mom will always bring up the fact that she tried to get me to watch Star Wars at a very early age, and I shied away from it until I always wanted to discover things on my own,
uh-huh,
I think.
Okay.
So yeah, this is my first time watching this film.
Did you have a good time?
I did. I enjoyed it. Yeah.
Yeah, it's a fun
one. I want to say I really, really admire its almost complete lack of plots.
Well, it's like miniature plots.
Yeah, yeah,
right?
Yeah. It's like a character study. It's like
there's even a line in the movie. It's like, if you're gonna sleep in so late, you're gonna miss some micro dramas.
Yeah,
and that's kind of like, yes, all the movie is a bunch of tiny micro dramas.
Yeah, it's like each character has their own game that's, yeah, being played, as you would call it in like improv, mm-hmm, comedy or whatever. But like,
I was thinking about that too. It's like, this is the second movie I've picked for Mike and David Movie Club that's like a kind of a comedic take on a funeral, because we watched, oh, right, Death at a Funeral,
yes,
right?
Yes.
That's like an ensemble of different kooky characters.
That's right. Playing, yeah, it is almost very similar to Death at a Funeral, yeah. I guess that's a good segue to talk about the actual, like, story.
The content of the movie, yeah. So, basically, we learn that a character has killed himself, and all his college friends are gathering, yeah, for the funeral, and for one reason or another, they all end up staying at the house over the long weekend after the funeral, and kind of we get the impression they haven't spent much time together, but they were very, very close in college, and they were all sort of radicals, they were all leftists in college, and could have kind of had that gradual rightward shift after college,
yeah,
right? And over the course of the weekend, they kind of address that and explore, like, are we the people we were then? And in some ways kind of get back into the flow of who the people they were back then.
Right.
But you know who the guy who killed himself, the actor, was?
No, was there an actor playing that?
It was Kevin Costner playing Alex, who killed himself.
It's just his body that you see being like dressed for the funeral.
Yes, or... that's the only time he's in the movie.
Is he in any photos in the background?
No, none at all. They had shot a sequence that's like a flashback in Ann Arbor, but they cut it from the movie for whatever reason. I guess the test audiences didn't like it, and Kasdan himself didn't like it. I wonder if it's like the idealized version of the college experience that you kind of are gleaning, okay, from the conversations, like, was it was better than what they could have come up with for the scene. Also, I like Kevin Costner, but I don't know if he's in the same talent range as the, okay, actors in this movie.
Fair enough.
Yeah. But yeah, it is very funny that Kevin Costner is in this movie, but you do not see his face ever. But yeah, so his character commit suicide, and he's like, it's like, he's the 60s, and he never moved on from the 60s, right?
Right.
And so this is them saying their final goodbyes, not only to their friend, but to like the people that they were back then.
Yeah. Even down to the music, which you brought up,
right,
already,
yeah,
which is like, is it, Kevin Kline's character that says, you know, we don't have, yeah, any other music in this,
not, yeah,
besides the 60s, basically, yeah, right? So William Hurt is like, he was like a talk radio therapist.
Yeah.
Sort of like Fraser Crane kind of thing.
Yeah, that's what it sounded like to me.
And then Jeff Goldblum is a journalist writing for People magazine.
Right. But he like went out of college saying he was going to teach for inner city schools, underprivileged kids, and then like quickly burned out from that. They've all like had like big ideas in,
yeah,
college of the people that they were going to be,
right,
and quickly abandoned that either because it got too hard or because they found a way to get money, and the first taste of money made them abandon their principles, basically.
Yeah, pretty much.
One of the characters, I think it was Mary Kay Place's character, was like a public defender,
uh-huh,
and hated it, and then went to like a high-paying law firm,
right,
deal afterwards.
And then Tom Berenger is basically like Magnum P.I.
Yeah, down to the mustache.
Tom,
yeah,
Selleck.
Uh-huh.
He's like a TV.
And there's some
star.
A very funny sequence where they watch the, yes. the opening credits to his TV show and are relentlessly mocking him.
And then Kevin Klein is married to
Kevin Klein doing a terrible accent. Oh my gosh. And what was the point of that? He's doing like a wacky Southern accent, yeah. but it keeps coming in and out.
Right.
And no one else in the movie is doing an accent.
Right.
And, let's see. And there's one character who's much younger than them. Who's Alex, the guy who killed himself, his girlfriend.
Right.
Who's had been living in the house and is kind of the outside observer.
What's the actress's name?
Meg Tilly?
Right.
Jennifer Tilly's sister,
right, yeah. Who is also in the Chucky TV series.
Oh, Meg Tilly is?
Yeah,
oh,
playing herself.
Oh, I gotta check that out. What else should we talk about? Did you see what Kevin Klein is like the one who's most like shifted to the right now. He's like he disavows. In fact, he's like chummy with the cop who was harassing William Hurt's character.
Yeah.
And he's like very dismissive about all the politics that they had in their college days. But his company is called Running Dog, and the shoe company is called Running Dog, which I guess is a very old term and predates Chairman Mao, but Chairman Mao was the one who like made it popular as a criticism of capitalism.
Oh.
So like the term basically a running dog would be like someone who serves at the behest of someone powerful and evil, basically.
Okay.
Like hoping for scraps and easy to see. Like, so it's kind of a self-diss, like the name of his, he's acknowledging his own selling out with the name of his company.
I did not put that together, and I wasn't aware of that term anyway, so yeah. That's an interesting tidbit.
Yeah. All right, Mike, this is my extra bit of audio to make a fool of you in the middle of our discussion in revenge for you making a fool of me during our Michael Clayton episode. Mike, you like to brag about being AMC A-list. I think you mean the AARP list, you old son of a gun. Mike, you got so many food allergies. I tried to serve you scrambled eggs on toast. I was charged with attempted murder. Mike, your wife is so much better looking than you. We were at Disneyland one time. Someone asked if you had won a contest. Mike, my 2-year-old son came to your place. I asked him how he liked it. He said there were too many toys. Mike, I treasure your friendship. Oh, I wanted to point out that this also connects to another Mike and David movie club movie, High Fidelity, because there's a funny joke in that movie. They're discussing like what song you would want played at your funeral, and Jack Black's character mentions you can't always get what you want.
Oh,
and,
yeah.
And like his dweeby little friend says, no, immediate disqualification because of its involvement in The Big Chill.
That's right.
And Jack Black's like, oh, you're right. Because it's like High Fidelity's the most Gen X movie ever.
Uh-huh.
And so they're like dissing on the most boomer movie ever.
Now we need to, is there any movie that has done the same for High Fidelity?
Oh, there should be, yeah.
Generation, what would have come after X?
Millennials, right?
Yeah.
Oh, there's going to be a millennial. And then Gen Z and then Gen Alpha.
Probably the High Fidelity TV show.
Right.
Insulted High Fidelity movie. I don't know.
Likely. I don't know. What else do we want to talk about? It's a fun one. I had a smile on my face. Like, there's some laughs in the movie, but it's mostly just like a pleasant.
Yeah.
It makes me think like, oh, it'd be so fun to like hang out with my college friends, like over a long week, or anybody over a long weekend, staying at a house together and doing cocaine and stuff would be fun.
I will say the movie was very, very close to what I had always pictured it to be.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I knew about the friend dying at the beginning. Like, mm-hmm. I thought it was just these boomers getting together and hanging out. But,
just because.
And that is pretty much what it is, except there's mm-hmm. an inciting incident that brings them all together.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, it was right on the money what I always, in my head, when I saw album cover in my mom's record collection. It's like, oh, that's what this movie is. It's, I mean, my mom would be of the, like, a slightly younger generation, because she was born in the mid-50s.
Okay.
So she was a bit younger than these characters would have been, but watching this really reminded me of, like, watching her hang out with her friends of the same age when I was growing up. So I could see why they liked it. They saw themselves in this movie.
Oh, I did want to point out, I mentioned how these characters, you know, were leftists in college and then, like, pretty quickly became more conservative, which, you know, was a real phenomenon for boomers. Like, that's how we got Reagan winning in the landslide in the 80s. But they, once they're all together again, there are, like, little hints of, like, it's like kind of a makeshift co-op and they're all cooking food together. And then they're, like, kind of reintroducing free love throughout the movie. And that plays a point in the plot where it's, like, not only free love, but, like, kind of to a purpose with one of the characters who's wants to be a mother. And
so, yeah.
But
I want to talk about the little kind of running subplot of the video camera, the camcorder, which they dig up at one point, and then each character kind of takes a turn, like, spilling their guts in front of the camera.
Yeah, mostly ironically, but you do get, like, the real,
right,
their real feelings out of it.
Why do you think that was included? Or how do you think, I don't know, what do you think Kasdan is trying to say with that?
It kind of feels like the talking head or, like, the confessional room in a reality show.
Right.
And I think it wasn't, I don't think it was super common to have video cameras in 1983.
Yeah, because there's that scene where, like, Jeff Goldblum's, like, trying to figure out how it works. And I was thinking, like, oh, yeah, there was a time where this was, like, new technology. Uh-huh.
Yeah. So I think it was, like, yeah, a bit of just a fresh detail for the movie.
But, yeah.
Some good sequences. I thought, watching it, I was like, this is an ugly movie, you know, like, visually. It doesn't look good, you know, like, the sets, the costume, even, like, these are good looking actors, and I don't know, their hair was all wrong, and some of the angles weren't good.
Okay.
I was like, well, that's something I didn't care for in the movie.
Is that just the 80s, or is that?
I think maybe it is. Yeah. It's the, I don't, people think of, like, Stranger Things as the 80s, like, that's not what it looked like.
That's what people always say, like, oh, I mean, you see the memes of, like, this is what you think the 80s was like, and it's all, like, ALF posters and stuff.
Yeah.
And then this is what the 80s were really like, and it's all those wood paneling.
Right, just brown.
Walls and gross carpeting. But yeah, when they went to the, there's a scene in the grocery store, and I was just like, oh yeah, everything, it just looks like a place where you wouldn't want to eat the food that came out of there. Our memory of the 80s is not as accurate as an actual film made during the 80s, I guess. I enjoyed it, though. I had a good time. I think I do really like these kind of, like, it is sort of like a slice of life character study, which I always enjoy. I tend to, as an adult, I tend to gravitate toward that stuff more than, like, very plot-heavy movies, so this was up my alley in that way.
Oh, that's great. So maybe it's good that you waited until now.
Oh, yeah. Oh, I definitely would not have liked this at all, like, 25 years ago.
Uh-huh. All right. Thanks, Mom. Good recommendation. Do you have anything more to say about The Big Chill?
I don't think we covered the music.
I don't think they're cool. I think Kasdan was saying, like, we were cool in college and we're still cool now. I don't think they're cool now.
Oh, that's the other thing I wanted to ask you. Like, how much of this do you think is, like, semi-autobiographical for
Lawrence Kasdan? I think he went
Lawrence Kasdan
to University of Michigan.
Did he?
I think, like, it probably is pretty, like, he definitely drew upon his experiences. Or at least that attitude is like, oh, we had these big ideas back then and...
Right.
And we were just kids or whatever, which I think is a cop out, and I don't think he should be getting away with it. So I guess in that way I disagree with the movie's message, but I still didn't enjoy it all.
It kind of brought to mind, like, Family Ties. You ever watch that sitcom?
With Michael J. Fox, where he's, like, really conservative and his parents are hippies.
Yeah, like it's around the same period as this movie, in just, like, the early 80s when it started. And yeah, they are of that same generation, I believe, that these characters would have been. But they're kind of fighting against that. I think they're more true to their political roots than these guys would have been. But yeah, it's an interesting... I think... I mean, these things come in waves, right?
Mm-hmm.
As far as, like, political revolutions or... because we're seeing, I don't know, we saw this shift back toward conservatism recently. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Do you think we'll start leaning in that other direction
again? Who knows?
Who knows? I hope so.
Generally, yeah. It's like a pendulum swing.
Yeah. I don't know. I guess that's what this is all about. But yeah, I did enjoy it. Thank you for choosing it. Is there anything else you want to say about it?
The Big Chill. Good cast, huh? We like Tom Berenger. We like Glenn Close, Jeff Goldblum, William Hurt. William Hurt's really good in it.
Yeah.
Kevin Kline wasn't that good in it, in my opinion, because of the accent. Otherwise, he was fine. Mary Kay Place. Meg Tilly and Joe Beth Williams. Shout out. We love him. That's The Big Chill. Mike, we're now moving into the end game of this episode of Who's the Boss After Dark. Yeah. Into a segment I like to call First Steps into a Larger World.
Okay.
Something I came up with where you have to share something, some media you've been watching, reading, listening to outside of the realm of Star Wars.
Okay. Do you want me to go first?
Or yeah.
I saw the new Sam Raimi film.
What's that called?
It's called Send Help.
Send Help.
It stars Rachel McAdams.
Oh, I like her.
And a young guy whose name I will not remember. O'Brien. Thank you. Dylan O'Brien from The Maze Runner, I think.
I haven't seen it.
I haven't seen that either. But this is a story of a woman who's very, very good at her job, but keeps getting like passed over for promotions. And her boss is a young Nepo baby jerk played by this young dude.
Cool.
And they go on like a work trip together and the plane crashes into the ocean and they end up on an island together.
Cool.
And it progresses from there. I liked it. I didn't love it. Mm. It gets more like Raimi-esque as it goes along.
All right.
So if you're into Sam Raimi and like that kind of like gross out horror comedy, then you might enjoy it as I did. It's not my favorite Sam Raimi. Even like in recent years, I would say like, Drag Me to Hell was probably a better movie in the same like tone as this. But it was fun. I enjoyed it.
Worth watching like a late night if you're
if it comes on in the mood for streaming. Yeah.
All right. I watched The Chair Company. Did you see that?
Yes.
That was good. Yeah, Tim Robinson's show.
I love when I watch something and then I watch or I like read other people's responses to it and everybody has the same like reactions of like, where did they find these like supporting actors?
Very bizarre. I think I mentioned to Bethany at one point, like it feels like the Coen brothers are like, if we're going to cast an actor, they're going to be interesting. Right. Yeah. So and when you watch a Coen brothers movie, like every bit part is interesting and there's not a wasted moment. And The Chair Company is like, every person is insane. It's like, right. This is a world where everyone is out of their minds.
Right.
And it had the kind of a classic noir flavor that you get from a movie like The Big Sleep, where you kind of get each individual scene what's going on. And then at the end of the episode, you're like, wait, what happened? Like, what was any of that?
Yeah. And I've seen people comparing it to David Lynch, too. Did you get any of that, like, kind of similar approach?
I didn't feel David Lynch when I was watching it. No? That's interesting,
But, yeah, it is kind of a Shaggy Dog mystery.
Mm-hmm.
Just the supporting cast. And Tim Robinson's kind of playing the same sort of character.
Right, yeah, which delights me to no end, so I'll watch him do that all the time.
He's the kind of guy who, he thinks the world is against him, and it kind of also is, right? I enjoy it. I'm glad it's coming back for a second season, because what the heck are they going to do? Like, this is not... It's such a, I think the best thing about it is that it builds from such a small nothing thing into this big like conspiracy.
Right. And the first couple episodes, you're like, he's just imagining things. Yeah, and then it, there actually is a conspiracy.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wonderful. Wonderful, Joe.
Yep.
Mike, there's one more order of business.
Wait, I wanted to ask you something. Wait. Okay. Let's do this first.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay, this is the part where I choose the next.
Yeah, you got to choose the next.
So a while ago, I don't know how long ago, because I can't keep track of time. Uh-huh. I would say maybe
years?
2 years ago.
Oh, wow.
Roughly. Maybe before your son was born. I told you what the 250th episode would be about.
Yeah, but I'm still going to act surprised.
Oh, okay, but you do remember.
Uh-huh.
Okay. A little movie released in 96, I think. No? Lower? 95? 93?
I think so.
Yeah. Wait, really? Oh, wow. I thought it was after that. Okay. 1993, set in Chicago.
Yeah.
Based on a TV show.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, gosh. I love this movie so much, and I've been waiting to talk about it on Who's the Boss.
A nice round number. 250. Yeah.
Right? We haven't used Harrison Ford as a connection yet, have we?
No.
No.
Let's do it this time.
Yeah. Harrison Ford, Tommy Lee Jones.
Joey Pants.
Joe Pantoliano.
Uh-huh.
Another Star Wars connection. Do you know what it is?
No.
The actor Daniel Roebuck.
Who's the young Boba Fett?
No.
No.
This is the guy who played Jay Leno in The Late Shift. Do you remember?
Oh, no. Uh-uh.
He is one of the U.S. Marshals.
Oh, cool.
And he is a voice of a character in Star Wars Jedi Fallen Order video game. There's the other Star Wars connection. It's called The Fugitive.
Yeah! The Fugitive!
I love this movie.
I didn't kill my wife.
Yep. RDU-90, Provasic, all that.
What a great time. That's going to be fun.
Yeah, so that's going to be...
Okay, knock out these next 9 episodes we got to watch.
I know. Well, the great thing is that we're going to have this mall animated series. Mm-hmm. And they are doing 2 a week, unfortunately, which cuts down the number of Who's the Boss episodes. I'll get out of it. But it's still going to be a nice chunk,
mm-hmm.
right? So we'll get there. We'll get there. And we'll talk about The Fugitive, episode 250, coming up sooner or later. David, I wanted to ask you about a little podcast called... Forgotten Video Store.
Oh, what's Forgotten Video
going
Store.
On with that?
I intend to bring it back for a second season. I did 23 episodes.
Nice.
Last year. Not easy to come up with that many ideas, but if someone listening to this doesn't know, it's a movie review podcast, but the movies do not exist. We are inventing them over the course of the episode. Kind of in game as if we have just watched the movie together. And Mike did it 3 times, 3 of the great episodes. And so I've only recorded 1 episode for the second season, and I have a couple more on the calendar. But yeah, I hope to bring it back, and it's going to be more esoteric references than ever.
And if you go and listen to my episodes, I recommend going in the order of release.
Uh-huh.
Because I got better at it. I get better at doing this as it went along, I think. In my opinion.
They were all good. Yeah.
David says they were all good. I was proudest of the 3rd one.
Yeah.
I will say. But that's Forgotten Video Store, wherever you get your podcast.
Right.
How could people get a magnet? That's what I want to know.
Just reach out to me on Instagram. Yeah.
Okay.
And I'll mail.
And you can follow both David and I on Letterboxd.
Letterboxd, yeah. I'm under Forgotten Video Store.
Yeah.
Mike's under Mike Celestino.
Just my name now. All right. Anything else? We good?
You coming over for the Oscars?
Oh, yeah. I thought about, because they announced the nomination.
Right.
But I was like, oh, David's a father now. He hasn't seen a lot of these movies. Should I even bother asking you, like, who's going to win the Oscars anymore?
Yeah, and it's early. Like, we haven't had the Guild Awards yet.
Right.
I don't know.
I don't,
one battle after.
No, I don't know if we'll get to 250 before the Oscars this year.
That's all right.
Yeah, I'll be here. Is that an official invitation?
Sure, yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Everyone listening to this episode is invited.
Yeah, why not? Come on over.
If you can figure it out.
Reach out to me for the address. Okay. It's fine.
You want to wrap up or you want me to wrap up?
Oh, yeah. This is Ben. Who's the Boss?
After Dark.
Is there more to it than that?
If you're cast in a movie that takes place in South Carolina, just go with your natural accent
yeah.
that you were born with.
Good night.
Boring conversation anyway.